The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm going to need you to take care of something for me.
What's that?
Whenever the Obama-produced documentaries and specials start appearing on Netflix, you know, they signed a deal with Netflix, the president and former First Lady Michelle. You're going to have to keep me updated on these, okay? You're going to have to bring them to the table. I don't subscribe.
You're asking me to like, watch them?
Yes.
Might not happen.
I can't wait to see. They plan on doing, remaking that series from the 1960s, apparently, I Spy.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Yes.
Also redoing the movie, the very popular movie in the 1970s. I actually saw it in the drive-in, All the President's Gender-Neutral AIDS.
Yes. They are going to do George Orwell's, 1984. It's a list of projects.
Well, or one of my favorite CIA movies of all time. I think it came out in 73 with Robert Redford. Mm. 3 Days of the Clapper.
Oh, there's so many sublines that one.
That just popped into my mind. By the way, I'm referring to the movie 3 Days of the Condor.
Yes.
Which was about the CIA and the CIA actually killing members. Well, actually, it wasn't the CIA. It was an off-branch of the CIA. Wow.
Mm. Wait a minute, what?
It was deep state? It was deep state killing CIA people who had discovered a covert operation from deep state, deeper than the CIA.
Oh, like Jason Bourne. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Right, yeah, right. Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't even think about throwing in the Bourne identity somehow and coming up with something like that. See, all my references were too old.
And why does the bureau chief on all those movies get angry when they find him? Like those, we spotted him in a train station, and it's always in Munich. He's in Munich. Blah, 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 blah. And the guy gets angry. Well, no, you should be happy. You spotted him. You know where he is. Then they start screaming orders. Come on, people. It doesn't really work that way.
Nothing happens in Germany.
It's like they're sitting around watching TV screens. Oh, come on. Seriously. Those movies almost became a parody of themselves. I think they should have stopped it, too.
Oh, the Bourne identity.
Yeah, the Bourne. They were great action movies.
I watched, I loved the first one, and I got through about the first 10 minutes of the second one, and I've never seen ones. I've never watched another one.
They're good action movies. I mean, you know, the premise is great, but you're pretty much just redoing every scene in every movie after that.
You got to be like John Wick. You got to, in order to get my attention, I'm kidding here, you got to make sure that you, in a very animated way, kill 30 people in the first 3 minutes.
Yes, for letting your dog out. Wouldn't that have been funny? The dog's not actually gone. Oh, sorry, guys. Sorry, my bad.
Never forget, I can't remember the character's name there. The Russian, the guy who was ahead of the Russian mob, killed his dog.
You killed his dog.
Oh, no.
And you took his car. And then the next thing John Wick does is he demolishes his own car, escaping with it. Yes, he did. Then takes it to a body shop. Yeah. We're going to need a total frame off on this one.
I like the body shop guy, though. He was shop guy.
John Leguizamo.
Yes, exactly.
He was great in that role, actually. he's great in a lot of roles. Why? He always plays the squirrely guy, doesn't he? That's it. In fact, almost literally in Ice Age, he played that little character, whatever it was. But
the whole point is you got to keep me updated on what Obama does on Netflix because
you're asking me to watch it. I think that's a big ask.
I'm not going to pay for it.
Yeah.
I already heard there was, you know, people objecting, saying we're going to get rid of our, and by the way, that's the marketplace.
Oh man, if you're getting rid of Netflix or any of those, I guess, services because of liberally slanted things, you're probably not going to find anything to watch. I mean, seriously, they're Showtime, HBO, or any of those subscription, you know, TV things before we ever got to Netflix or Hulu. That's the whole thing. It's selective. You don't have to, you know, there are some things on there that are patriotic. You know, there are some things on there for Christians. There are, you know, you can go and watch and stream plenty.
Well, yeah, you got to throw the patriots and Christians a bone here.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Just, you know,
you've seen, I mean, you can scroll through just about, well, go back to the day when we had to go to the video store and pick up an actual video. You know, you walk past all the stuff you don't want to see, you know.
That's true, yeah.
I don't look at it that way. Look, people can do what they want to, but I'm not going to drop my Netflix because Obama's have something on Netflix.
Well, you know, the interesting thing was I went because my father had, when I got back after visiting my parents, he said, oh, we got something, you know, or something with our smart TV has to be updated. He said, we couldn't get to you know, YouTube. Mm-hmm. I said, well, did you try, you know, Amazon? And he just said, no, but I will. And I said, well, let me try mine because I have the same smart TV system that he does, mm-hmm. the DVD. So I went and checked it, and mine had already automatically updated. So mm-hmm. I didn't know what the problem was. But I said, you know, I haven't gone to Amazon Prime in about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look at what the free movies are. You know, I'm just saying, in this day and age, and I have Amazon Prime for the shipping,
mm-hmm.
but the fact is, since they promote the movies so much, could you update and give a few more?
Yeah, you know, there's
free movies.
Well, there's the other side of it is that they also make money by rentals. You know, just like
exactly.
There's a lot of stuff that's still in theaters that they'll put out there every once in a while. They'll just put one out there, and you can rent it for $7.99. And what they're trying to do, it's a smaller production probably, and they'll put those up for rent for a limited time, maybe a week or so, trying to get word of mouth out there. It's a lot like all of the Nicolas Cage movies. They go straight to video now. I mean, I don't know that he's done anything that's been actually released in theaters over the last several years.
I mean, since Knowing?
Yeah. But there's a ton of stuff on there that we love to rent in terms of the new stuff that comes up.
Yeah.
And there's some original TV shows that they're putting on that are pretty decent.
Well, you know how I know I'm old? I've seen all the American Pickers, so that I can't watch that anymore. And they run like a marathon every Monday.
Right.
You know, because that show for a couple of years just kept me company while doing show prep on Mondays. Because it was AMC or one of them would run it just a marathon.
Right.
And you're not really watching television. You're just sort of going on a trip with them. Is what you,
right.
That's, yeah. It's not like watching some type of drama. And so now that I've watched every one of that, I've the last 6 months or so, it's been Aerial America on the Smithsonian Channel. Mm. Where they just go to every state. Now they're starting to go to different countries, but they just, you know, they describe every state from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they go through every little town, you know, from the air, and it's called Aerial America. And it's, I mean, it's, but when that's your, you know that you're getting old when that's one of your favorite shows.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's time to hang it up.
Yeah.
But interesting day we've got. By the way, I did love, even though probably a lot of people didn't know the reference of 3 days of the Clapper. That James Clapper is a piece of work, is he not?
Yeah, right.
I mean, we'll get to some of the audio on him because he's out there promoting the whole thing. Well, it's a good thing,
right?
It's a good thing because the FBI is here to you know, protect us from the Russians. So it's a good thing that there was someone was in there, which means he's not denying it. Nobody's denying it, so we all know that it is. The case. So we'll get to that. The president meets with the Justice Department, And the White House has agreed that the inspector general is the right way to go. Others disagree on that.
Right.
The inspector general, though, to look at the spy in the Trump campaign. And also Sarah Huckabee Sanders announcing that John Kelly with the leaders of Congress will meet and get the top secret information that they want.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what we have been saying should have been going on the entire time. Now, the interesting thing is the Democrats screaming that the president is interfering in the investigation by wanting total transparency.
Yes. And we said this would happen.
And if the
White House acted, then he's going to be, seen as someone who's interfering in the investigation. And the fact is that we have to have transparency here. We must.
It's the an example of the last gasp of the Trump-Russia collusion narrative. This is a beauty coming up here in a little bit. Now, I wrote this wrong. I put together the list of what we're doing on the show today. U.S. list demands for new Cuba deal. I meant Iran.
Mm. Well,
but I wrote Cuba. Mm. I don't know why. A new study out. Women view male feminist as less masculine. It's a study. Don't get on the messenger's case. We'll have that for you. Former Trump advisor makes the claim about a second informant.
Yeah.
Now, that has been thrown about a little bit here. We've talked about those that have brought it up, and this is Michael Caputo,
mm-hmm.
Who was an aide, and he's been around a lot. He was on, I think, Fox a couple of weeks ago and talking about how he's just, just bankrupt completely. Now, I know he opened up a GoFundMe account. From what I know, he raised more than he claimed that he had lost in the GoFundMe account.
Mm-hmm.
And just the little disclaimer here that I always bring up, it really doesn't mean anything because I've not haven't been related to that station for 21 years. But Michael Caputo actually fills in for the old show that I used to do in Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fill-in talk show host. So that really, but there is no conflict of interest there. But it's just,
no,
I just
say you haven't been there for ages.
Yeah, but I like to name drop. Starbucks has to clarify their new policy after one day.
So that means some people will be excluded. You mean there are going to be rules?
There's going to be rules.
Oh,
it's not going to be a free-for-all.
Oh, no.
It's not going to be anarchy in the Starbucks UK. No, it's not going to be anarchy there. No sleeping, no drug use. And now they got the media out there talking to, the employees, the managers, the customers who are saying, we don't know if we like this.
Right.
This could cause major problems.
Well, yeah. If you're going to basically open your, restaurant and say anyone in your establishment, your coffee house, what do they call it? Place for coffee. If you're going to say that anyone in there is a customer, whether they're buying or not, you basically just turn your restrooms into public restrooms.
Yeah, what is this, radio?
Yeah. Do like the old gas stations did. Put the doors on the outside of the building, and you have to come in and get a key.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right.
Wow. That's right.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember as a high school student going by, and we go by every day, and we waved to the guy, and one time I had to go, and I mm-hmm. walked in. I said, I waved you every day, and I know I'm not buying gas. But I even knew then as a kid.
Right.
But can I hit your bathroom? Yeah, sure, kid.
Yeah, right. Don't most locations, if not all locations of Starbucks, have free Wi-Fi? I mean, most establishments do.
Yes.
So you're also going to have people coming in there sitting down.
For Wi-Fi,
sitting down and using Wi-Fi. They're
now,
a customer, right?
Now, the interesting thing is, now, up in this is what I know what I want to do.
Hmm.
There's a, when I go back to visit my parents in New York, there's a Tim Hortons, and it's right next door to a Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go in to a Tim Hortons, grab a Tim Hortons coffee.
Right.
And
bring your own.
And a box of the Tim Hortons donut holes and walk over to the Starbucks and sit down and start using their Wi-Fi while drinking the Tim Hortons and eating the basically, they call them Timbits.
Yeah.
And be doing that in a Starbucks and see the response.
Yeah. I mean, I walked in one time to a McDonald's and the guy had a huge booth and he had all of his entire office set up in there. He was doing business. I was like, wow. Now, I thought at first maybe he was the manager of the restaurant, but it turns out that's not the case.
And so we have a good show ahead. We got a really, really good show ahead. You know why? I'm going to laugh a lot.
All right.
Because otherwise I'll cry.
Yeah. By the way, all of our listeners are also welcome to use the restroom.
That's why I said, what do you think this is, radio?
Not you know? Here. I mean, not in our building, but,
no.
You know.
Wherever you are.
Somewhere.
We now pause while Gary bursts out laughing.
Yeah. Yes.
All right.
So, yeah, good luck with that, Starbucks. You open the door, now you got to make the rules.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. So much to talk about. We got some great audio cuts coming up here in just a little bit that you are not going to want to miss. And plus, we'll get into the narrative now as to everybody questioning, when did this investigation begin?
Right.
When did the investigation actually begin? They actually go back to an interview that the president did with the media, where he was asked, you know, that this was back in March of 2016, where he was asked about some of his foreign policy people, because he really didn't have a lot of foreign policy people. And so he went through a list of names of people that was handed to him. You know, that these are the people, and Page and Papadopoulos were on it. And there's this train of thought, thinking that now that we know that even has been in the mainstream media that before the investigation actually began, the informant was talking to, you know, weeks before it began, was talking to Papadopoulos. Well, then the investigation had already begun. Mm. Otherwise, why was the informant, the spy, talking to Papadopoulos?
Right.
So the official investigation may have begun when they wished to let you know that the investigation began. And now the question is, did the investigation begin after the March 23rd media interview that Trump did? And we'll have the specifics on that coming up here in just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when it actually started, between March and July?
Right.
That it was actually taking place a long time before that.
You know, this is the question that has to be answered. Where do you start? Where does this thing start? Where does it begin? What was the basis for it? What was the justification for it? There had to be an event or a number of events that got the FBI's attention. What were those? Identify those events. For Cobra Electronics, here's your forecast.
A stationary front with us throughout the day yesterday is moving slightly to the north and east. We'll see an area of low pressure along that frontal boundary in the northeast today. Pennsylvania Turnpike, look to use your windshield wipers there. As you move northward out of New York City up into upstate New York, good chance of rain throughout that region. Southward in the deep south, a chance for rain continues today. South Florida with some heavy showers in the forecast. Drying out somewhat for the northern and central plains as well as the Midwest. A few select cities forecast and high temperature. Boston, partly cloudy, chance of showers until tomorrow, 69 the high. Atlanta, thunderstorms, 81. Dallas, 90 with a 30% chance of thunderstorms. Denver, mostly sunny, 82. Seattle, sunny and 76. L.A., cloudy and 69. The threat of flooding continues in the Mid-Atlantic due to recent rainfall. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Mm-hmm.
And the drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Yeah, I could use a shot of something here, just having computer problems. So I had some audio cuts ready to go, but they will be delayed here a little bit because something attacked my computer.
Yeah.
Some kind of malware to buy an advertisement to get rid of malware.
Right. Yeah.
I always loved
one
that.
One of those takeover things.
I always loved that one where it just takes over everything, where we just had to shut it down and went back and it was still there. And so going back again to try it again. So
yeah.
So there you go. This is from Fox News. Starbucks announced a new policy Saturday that allows anyone to occupy the coffee shop or use the store's facilities, even if they don't buy anything, or many are left to wonder if it'll have a negative effect. The third place policy maintains that employees should consider anyone who enters a Starbucks space, including restrooms, cafes, and patios, a customer, regardless of whether they make a purchase, the company said in its statement. We are committed to creating a culture of warmth and belonging where everyone is welcome, Starbucks said. Customers using the space must still follow a set of general guidelines. You can't go naked. Which requires them to use spaces as intended, be considerate of others, communicate with respect, and act responsibly, or they may be asked to leave.
Define responsibly. Because you're leaving it up. Are you not leaving it up to the manager? Right?
Apparently they're not now. But then the Wall Street Journal updated from last night. Starbucks has now clarified their guest policy.
Okay.
This from the Wall Street Journal business section. Starbucks says drug use, sleeping, unacceptable as it clarifies guest policy.
Oh.
By the way, I'm not a guest. I'm a customer. Right?
Right. A guest gets free coffee. Right.
Exactly. Company statement is second attempt now to explain its new policy following complaints that it would turn cafes into homeless shelters and drug havens. Starbucks tried to dig itself out of the controversy Monday by attempting to clarify a policy towards non-paying guests. A Seattle-based retailer on Saturday said it would allow all guests in its U.S. company-owned stores to use its cafes, including restrooms, whether or not they make a purchase. That announcement, which attracted Some support. Also drew complaints that the cafes wouldn't have enough seats for paying customers. Yeah, I've got a friend of mine, and we get together like once every 6 months, and she always wants to meet at this one particular Starbucks. There's never room inside, and they're all paying customers.
Yeah, right.
They don't have a lot of seating in a lot of Starbucks.
Right.
And so there are actually some people standing around drinking coffee. I just thought about that now when they said that, that there's not a lot of seating. And the Starbucks, that, and I don't go to Starbucks much, but whenever I meet her there, you know, she's like, well, get there and get some seats if you get there. All right. If I can, I'll try to get something outside. And especially here in Texas in the summertime, nobody wants to sit outside.
Right. And drink hot coffee.
And drink, exactly,
or
drink
cold
hot coffee.
So
on Monday, Starbucks revealed more about its policy, telling the Wall Street Journal that employees now have detailed instructions on what to do if somebody is behaving in a disruptive manner, such as smoking, using drugs or alcohol, using restrooms improperly.
Well.
Or sleeping. At issue, in essence, is whether Starbucks views itself as a business that caters to customers or a quasi-public place generally welcome to all. The uproar, which follows the arrest last month of two black men who wanted to use a Starbucks bathroom in Philadelphia, demonstrates the unusual spot that the nation's biggest coffee chain holds in America's culture. While many other restaurants and retailers also must manage the issue of lingering customers and non-paying guests who come in to use the restrooms, Starbucks has promoted itself as providing a third place between home and work where people can freely exchange ideas. It essentially pioneered the idea that is now generating controversy. So there you go.
Hmm.
So Joe Paulwick, managing principal at a restaurant consulting firm, Technomic Incorporated, quote, "The whole Starbucks situation has opened up a can of worms. In most cases, restaurants leave it up to the discretion of the individual restaurant, and most are too busy to enforce a policy." He said, "Get John Taffer on the phone."
Well, you know, I mean, it's always busy, right? Because people are in and out. They stop in to get their coffee. It's always going to be busy. It's going to be a rare case that a manager has to stop and go, I guess, enforce a rule,
right,
like that. But here's the thing: what they're saying is, well, we welcome everybody. Oh, but we're going to have to put some rules back in. Well, here you go again. Acting responsibly. Well, that's a pretty wide brush there, and which means what? The manager's going to have to determine if someone is acting responsibly, using the restrooms responsibly. The manager's going to determine that. And then if that's not the case and they need to remove someone, they're going to call the police. Everybody's got a cell phone. Roll video.
Whenever I go back to New York, and you know, we go to this particular restaurant, my parents and I, and then we try to get the whole family there as we did on Mother's Day. So we actually actually put together two tables.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they know us there. They know when we come in. I mean, they know I come in from Texas. And mm-hmm. We come in and they know we tip good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a very special time, and so we've been going there for years. And so just on Mother's Day we went, you know, Saturday before Mother's Day we went in,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't that crowded when we went in. I said, good, you know, it was like 11 o'clock. We went in for breakfast, and there was 9 of us, I think. So we put together two tables, and so we're there, and you know, looking around, and it wasn't really crowded, and so paid, left the tip. They're still pouring us coffee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they just know us. And about 20 minutes after we were done, 20, 25 minutes after we were done, and all of a sudden, a line of people started coming in the door. And it just automatically, I looked at everybody and I said, guys, we got to start packing it up and going.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time to go now because there's people coming in. I mean, I'm aware of that under probably the John Taffer in me, that every single table and every single chair is worth a certain amount every single year.
Mm-hmm.
That you actually, in order to survive, that's how you've got to be thinking. And you've got to be thinking that your goal is to get the maximum amount of those tables and those chairs, just like it is on Bar Rescue. Every single, remember when Taffer comes in and says, look, I redesigned your bar, and this table right here will be $17,500 of business every year.
Mm-hmm.
It is a science.
Oh, yeah. Table turnover in restaurant is a real thing. I mean, you can't have it. I have a friend, he's British, but he has a home in France. And in this little village that he lives in part-time, they go to lunch for 3 hours. I mean, they'll sit at a table for 3 hours. And that's the whole village shuts down for 3 hours. And in America, with the, you know, the restaurant culture that we really have become, a lot of people, you know, relying on restaurants almost completely for their sustenance. Mm-hmm. The business part of it is that you have to turn those tables over. So if they're not turning over, you go back, the server will ask, you know, see a dessert menu?
Right. Exactly.
You know, can
right.
I get you anything else? And we've been very aware of that because we have I have family members in restaurant management, and so it is a science, but it's also a people business. So you kind of have to keep the customer happy. But you know, this whole Starbucks approach to saying, "Well, we were wrong to call the police." Look, you and I have said multiple times we have no idea what happened. You know, before cameras started rolling, we have no idea about the two gentlemen who were arrested by the police. But we do know that any establishment, restaurant or otherwise, has the right to enforce their rules. And if there is what they believe is criminal trespassing, they can call the police to determine if they believe, the police believe, that those individuals are trespassing at that point. But you know this, but you can't in 2018 not to sit here and defend Starbucks because we've gone after them, but to defend the right of any business to conduct business.
Oh, and
because Starbucks has made it clear in this new clarification of their new policy that they're essentially still going to have a similar policy because they had broad words in that clarification.
Right.
That tells you what? That somebody on site, a manager or an assistant manager, is going to have to make the call. When they say you're going to have to, you know, they're abide by the rules, which one of them is act responsibly. What does that mean?
Well, but you have to ask this question. If 10 people come in and take a, and by the way, 10 people at a Starbucks, depending on the layout of Starbucks, can take a significant amount of seating in that particular restaurant. If 10 people come in, just say a bunch of kids come in and just sit down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, then what's at that particular point, what is that manager supposed to do? That manager whose job and livelihood is based on what?
Money.
Because at the end of the day, and this is what I would look. And by the way, Starbucks management can do whatever they want.
Sure.
I'm just saying that when you look at it, what's the reality of it? That Starbucks manager at the end of the day is being told you must abide by this. And what they're telling them they must abide by will hurt the bottom line of that particular store. And I'm telling you right now, the Starbucks management is not looking at that manager when sales are down and stating, well, are you obeying our policy? They're stating, why are we down?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, again, you can do whatever you want. But the fact is, you sell coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do. If you wish to do otherwise, you can do so. You can do whatever you wish to do. But the fact is, as you see, even Starbucks has its limits. And the guarantee the customers, the loyal customers of Starbucks. And I've been in some pretty high-end Starbucks where you look at the vehicles that are parked outside, the vehicles that are in there, mm-hmm. and you're talking about high, very high socioeconomic demographic mm-hmm. that is using those stores. I was telling you about a couple that I knew when I was in Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I said, if they walk in and there's just people laying around doing nothing, you're going to have a bunch of ticked off customers.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll stop coming in.
Right. But you can see Starbucks already knows by changing the policy already.
Which means, we got to put some rules back in.
Right.
Because you have the right to do that. They have a right to do whatever they want. They can give away their business if they want to. They can diminish their business if they choose to do that. But the fact of the matter is they went into business to make money, to make a profit, and they have a right to enforce whatever policy it is. And if they believe someone is not acting appropriately, they can call the authorities, and the authorities can decide, the police on site can decide whether or not those individuals have met the standard for criminal trespassing or any other law that may have been broken.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. Look, Sheldon, Ron, Dan, and more will get your calls and comments. A lot of people wanting to comment on Starbucks' revised policy.
Yeah,
second revised policy now, and we'll see what happens then. Plus, we got some great audio. That James Clapper is quite a piece of work. He did another interview yesterday. He's out there doing the interview saying, well, it's a good thing.
Right.
It's a good thing if informants are in a presidential campaign. It's a good thing because we're trying to watch out for the Russians. It's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
Right. Yeah.
Is it now?
Well, we should have it then in every campaign.
Well, either have it in every campaign or, as someone asked before, if it's a good thing, well, then if you're just looking for the Russians and why, you know, trying to get into a campaign, well, then why don't you
work with
simply
the campaign?
Work with the campaign?
Mm-hmm. Why would you need a spy?
Should have gone to Trump immediately and said, look, right. We believe some people in your campaign may have some ties. We want to warn you about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. You would do that out of respect, saying
that's what you
hey,
would do. Yes.
We believe that Russians are trying to infiltrate your campaign because right. This is the liberal media right now. And Clapper and people trying to justify this whole thing once it fell. You know, last week, a few of them were saying, oh, that's just a myth. They don't have any proof that there was a... Not a spy, an informant. Okay, call it what you want. It's a spy. And no, you can't do this and justify this.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Thanks for being here. Coming up here in just a little bit, we'll get to your calls and comments here. A lot of people want to get aboard about the whole Starbucks changing their policy. Well, amending their policy, updating their policy that was in effect for one day. The Department of Justice will allow Congress to review highly classified requested documents relating to the FBI's investigation into the Trump 2016 campaign in conjunction with the White House and other agencies. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Monday, quote, based on the meeting with the president, the Department of Justice has asked the Inspector General to expand its current investigation to include any irregularities with the Federal and Bureau investigations or the Department of Justice's tactics concerning the Trump campaign, end of quote. Sanders said, quote, it was also agreed that the White House Chief of Staff, Kelly, will immediately set up a meeting with the FBI, the DOJ, the DNI, together with congressional leaders to review highly classified and other information that they have requested, she continued. Trump met with Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats, FBI Director Wray, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein Monday afternoon to discuss congressional request. Conservative lawmakers have pressed the Department of Justice for weeks to turn over highly classified documents relating to the FBI's 2016 investigation, particularly to discern abuse of power or the use of a confidential informant to infiltrate the campaign. So, again, it's something that you and I probably requested, I don't know, probably in the last month. We said, okay, it's time.
Right. It's and despite all the screaming from the left, it's going to have to happen. We have to have full transparency here. You know, there's when you look at this situation, there's no other way to approach this. There just isn't. I mean, there could have been. It should have never been the case in for this entire thing to have gone this far in terms of the back and forth between oversight and the Department of Justice. You know, so when you look at all that, when we were talking about Trey Gowdy and Devin Nunes having to negotiate, having to have meetings at the Department of Justice?
Nope. They get to see him.
No. There's no negotiation.
And it, as we have said, if you've never heard our discussion on this before, this is beyond politics. It's the way that our government is set up. Mm-hmm. And we do always throw this out, though, because it's very important that when we get into this discussion, that the majority of Americans don't understand the discussion we're about to have. You do, because you're listening to the show, so of course you do. But most Americans have no idea what the separation of powers is, because they can't even tell you what the three branches of government are. Latest surveys have shown that, mm-hmm. and that's been that way for a while. But the latest one we brought you shows, again, the majority of Americans, vast majority, cannot tell you what the three branches of government are. So they don't know about the constitutional separation of powers. They don't understand why you have a Congress, why you have a judiciary, why you have an executive branch. And the whole point of it, which is to do what? To ensure that power is not concentrated in a small area of the government. Why? Because when you have, for an example, an executive branch under Obama, where the law enforcement, which is under the executive branch, believes that they get to set policy, the last thing you want is a concentration of power in unelected representatives.
Yeah.
And so what you have is the arm that monitors what law enforcement in the executive branch is doing, because we have a separation of powers, is our elected representatives. And those elected representatives who get top secret clearance to know what the intelligence agencies, the FBI, and the Department of Justice are doing. Why? Because the whole concept is we the people. Very simple.
Well,
it's we the people. Now, yep. We don't get to know the top secrets.
No.
But our elected representatives who represent us do.
They get to be our eyes in this case.
Right. They get to be our eyes. The unelected bureaucrats in the executive branch do not control the top secrets and decide to do what the top secrets of the United States are.
Right.
They don't get to decide the fact that we can operate with impunity, that we aren't accountable to anyone. Yes, you are. You're accountable to the people of the United States and those that hold the unelected bureaucrats in the executive branch accountable is the members of Congress who we the people vote for.
Yep.
It's not that hard.
Yep. And it's there is no negotiation. It was set up like this for a reason.
And if we have to explain it again to any Democrats who are screaming that the president is intimidating and getting involved in an investigation, the president is simply telling, as the head of the executive branch, he is telling them, give the investigators in Congress, those that are elected by we the people, that they have an absolute right to see what they want when it comes to what you're up to.
Yep.
It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fascism. It is not it's exactly the opposite.
Yep.
And so I've heard some spinning over the last couple of days, which is just so easily defeated.
Well, it's insane. Yeah, because this is again, you have to ask yourself why the FBI, why the Department of Justice would hold back from releasing the information to people on an oversight committee in the first place. Why is this whole thing like pulling teeth? If this was a legitimate investigation, there should be nothing to hide. In fact, shouldn't they be concerned? We have more elections coming up. I mean, if we're talking about people interfering with the elections process, whether they're American or foreign, shouldn't the left be concerned with getting this all out now so the American people are very aware and we can put the pressure on not just our elected representatives, but the agencies that are supposed to be enforcing those rules and laws? Shouldn't you be concerned that there's a possibility that this is still going on? Shouldn't you be concerned that nobody's been brought to justice on this whole thing? You should be screaming for transparency. And if it's justified, there should be zero resistance from the FBI in terms of oversight. None. It was justified, and here's how this all went down. Sit down behind closed doors. You show Devin Nunes and anyone else on the House Intel Committee that has requested this. He's the chairman, but you sit down with them and you walk through it and say, here you are. Why the delay? Why hold that back? He's cleared to see those names. He's cleared to see all that information. Zero reason. Zero. And the fact that we're still having this discussion is just, it's insane. The fact that we have to sit here and debate something where there is no debate is insane.
Well, as I said, it's whether it does get to the point. I mean, the Democrats scream it, and they're actually right in what they say, but they're using the labels on the wrong people.
Well, what's the difference between fascism and a democracy?
Actually, it's the difference between fascism and a constitutional republic. A republic means you elect representatives to act in your best interest. Those elected representatives, a certain number of them, get to see the top secrets of the United States, because the unelected bureaucrats cannot wield power without accountability. If we allow them to do that, just so Democrats understand the difference, that would be much more of a fascist mindset than the people that believe that the elected representatives of the people should be the ones who are ultimately in charge and hold those in that have the bureaucratic positions in the executive branch, that it is the members of Congress in those agencies, or excuse me, in those intelligence committees that hold the unelected bureaucrats accountable. That's how it's done in a representative democracy. And I know, I don't mean to be boring anybody who's a longtime listener to the show who understands that, but remember, we come into this now with the understanding that the majority of Americans do not understand what the three branches of government are about. They don't understand the separation of powers. And so we feel it's our duty, at least, to explain to the one or two out there who might not know how it works.
Yeah.
All right, to you we go. Let's go to Sheldon in Columbia about Starbucks. Sheldon, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, salutations. You know what? I have spoken to the CEO of Starbucks. I remember way back when he made another, how would you say, I guess, a power change, that's what I call it all, when the aggressive carry gun lobby wanted to bring, everybody and their brother wanted to bring guns in there. You know, the CEO said, no, no more. We'll have no more guns. So he lost a lot of business on that. Now, he may get some blowback and some pushback on this, and I imagine he will. However, I think it's the right thing. You know, he shut down 800-something Starbucks, and you said something about the policy will be here in the United States also. I imagine it's going to be there in the U.K. But the bottom line is how, you know, the CEO of Starbucks said, this is how it's going to be. If you don't like it, there's the door. Go ahead and hit it and everything like that. I don't see it so much as a policy change as I see it as inclusionary change and everything like that.
Well, it is a policy. Because, well, you may not consider it a policy change, but Starbucks does. Starbucks considers it a policy change. You might not, but you don't. Are you in Starbucks? Or you do work for the company? Are you? Do you set the policy?
No,
because
but I mean,
this was a. This
is where Starbucks came from, right?
It doesn't matter where Starbucks came from.
Where they are today.
It's where they are today, and the fact that you just said this isn't a policy. You can't say it's not a policy when Starbucks says this is our new policy, and now here's an amendment to our. Now this is our second policy change to the first policy. They're the ones that are changing.
What do they want to do?
What?
Yeah, they're trying to have inclusionary. They're trying to, you know, include, you know, more people in the Starbucks and all that.
When
did they not include people?
Prior to those African Americans getting arrested.
Sheldon, the police also decided there was criminal trespassing.
You're wrong.
Sheldon.
Sheldon.
What did the police decide?
No, forget the police.
Sheldon.
Everybody's wrong.
No, I want to know. Wait, we got to get no. Sheldon. I've got to get to this with you, Sheldon. Sheldon, be quiet for a moment, because I got to get to this point with you. Are you saying that Starbucks' policy before this was not to serve African Americans? Was that their policy?
No, I didn't say that. Did I say that?
You said it wasn't inclusionary. So
you said they weren't.
You said not inclusionary.
You said Starbucks. You said Starbucks. You said Starbucks wasn't inclusionary. So I'm asking you a question. What did that mean?
Yes, now it is. Yes, now it is.
Well, no, they weren't before.
So they weren't. So Starbucks.
They weren't before.
So Starbucks wasn't before. Their policy was not inclusionary?
No. Because
you just said it.
Yeah.
All right. No. Thanks, Sheldon. Sheldon, we appreciate your call, but you're all over the place.
Yeah.
That's why I had to stop him on it, because that's when he said that, that was the key. That, you know, now they're inclusionary, which meant they had a policy of not being inclusionary before. Well, no, they didn't. Well, you just said they did.
Yeah.
Just get your
you're
story
all over
straight.
The place.
Get your story straight.
And. Again, the authorities showed up, the police, and, oh, forget the police, so forget the law. Okay.
Right. I just, again, we were trying to, because when you said that, they are now inclusionary, it meant that before they were not inclusionary, which meant that had to be the policy.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just wondering if you were calling Starbucks had a non-inclusionary racist policy
mm-hmm.
before the two black men walked into the Philadelphia store.
Right.
That's what you were attempting to say.
Right, exactly. That implies that they did not want people of certain ethnicities and skin colors in their establishment.
Yes, I don't think, not that I'm a defender of Starbucks, but I don't believe they had that policy.
Nope.
I don't believe that Starbucks had a non-inclusionary policy before the Philadelphia incident.
Right.
And by the way, if you wish to agree with their policy, that's fine. But as we said, as Eric was trying to, what does inclusionary mean? Does it mean non-paying customers? Anybody can come in? That you're not a business, you're a gathering place? That's fine. If they wish to be a nonprofit gathering place, they have the right to do that.
But they're still discriminating based on behavior. It is exclusionary at some point based on people's behavior.
Right. And it will continue to be.
It still, they just outlined it. They just said it.
And the next one will be, okay, there's an hour limit to you sitting without having a purchase. Because then when that,
whatever
when
is affecting start, business is how they will change policy.
Exactly. 866-90-RED-EYE.
The dates and location for the 36th annual Shell Rotella Super Rigs contest are set. Dave Waterman from Shell has the details.
We are going to be at White's Travel Center in Raphine, Virginia. It's a little bit outside of Lexington, Virginia, right off of I-81 and I-64. It was designed way back when as a way for Shell Rotella to give back to the trucking community, appreciation for all they did and all the support of our brand. It's an event that really encourages truckers to get together, whether they're going to show a show caliber truck or just their daily driver that might have some scratches and dings in it. It's open to all of them. And in fact, we encourage, as you know, the working truck. Judging, of course, is going to take place Thursday through Saturday. We're going to have a light contest taking place on Thursday, and then we'll do a truck parade down to Old Town Lexington. There'll also be health checks available for truckers on site. We're going to do the scavenger hunt again so folks can walk away with prizes. Just on the Shell Rotella Super Rigs part of it, it's up to $25,000 in both cash and prizes.
They want to learn more. Where do they go?
Well, they can go to Rotella.com. They can also go to whitestravelcenter.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Let's go to Tom in Port Angeles, Washington, about the spy.
Mm.
Hi, Tom. You're on Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, guys.
You're welcome.
if there wasn't, if we do this, if Trump can actually get, you know, the revelations that he wants, are we going to find out if there was a spy also placed in the Hillary Clinton campaign? Because there sure should have been if Trump was getting, surveilled by the FBI.
Well, here's...
And if there wasn't, that would indicate to me that, you know, this was about getting rid of Trump.
Well, that's a great point.
It is a great point, because if they knew about the dossier...
Right. They know
by,
the connection.
By, you know, whenever they knew about the dossier, they knew who it was funded by.
Thanks, Tom.
And so if the FBI knew that the dossier was funded in July or August of that year, if they knew that the dossier, or September, if they knew that it was paid for by the DNC, they knew it came from the Russians. So if you're truly investigating collusion with the Russians, you would have had a spy there, correct?
The drinking game continues. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently, is Freightliner's number one goal. Hey, if you weren't at the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville back in March, you missed it. Tough Tested has their power sled out there on the road, a really cool-looking truck done up right by the boys over at Four State Trucks in Joplin, and man, this truck looks awesome. And they've got a really, really cool mini rat cart that's also part of this tour. It's going to be out there on the road. In fact, on the road right now over the next several months. You can go to Tough Tested's Facebook page, get a look at the truck, but find out where it's going to be at a stop near you sometime soon so you can get an up-close and personal look at it. And thank you to Tough Tested for making this fun. My friends George and Wendy Parker are basically, they're conducting that tour. They're great drivers, and they're out there, and they're on the road and really showing it off the right way at these great stops. Go to Tough Tested's Facebook page for more, and for more on their products, go to toughtested.com.
In other news, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee asked the Justice Department Monday to turn over communications between former Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, British spy Christopher Steele, and others about the infamous anti-Trump dossier. In a letter to the Deputy Attorney General, Senator Chuck Grassley requested Orr's emails, phone logs, written notes, and text messages. Grassley also asked the Justice Department to arrange for Orr to be interviewed by the committee staff. Grassley wrote that he wants to know whether Orr continued to pass information from Steele to others at the FBI after the Bureau terminated the former MI6 man as a source for disclosing his relationship with the FBI to the media. In February, Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee claimed that Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, was employed by Fusion GPS. I'm telling you, man. I mean, it just, the tentacles of this is,
yeah,
just.
I know.
But whether Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie, who was employed by Fusion GPS to assist the cultivation of opposition research on then candidate Donald Trump, they allege that Bruce Orr passed the research, which had been paid for by the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign, onto the FBI. The Steele dossier, which was published by BuzzFeed News in January 2017, included claims about Trump's business ties to Russia and salacious assertions about his private life. So also what we forget about is the Senate Judiciary Committee is also looking into this, too. There's a number of people doing that. Interestingly enough, from the Hill, Democrats expand their 2018 message to draining the swamp. They are now going to accuse the Trump administration of being the swamp that needs to be drained.
Yeah. That's completely original.
Democrats are turning their campaign message to the many scandals swirling around the Trump administration. Wow. You may be, you know, coming out with this today, this is something you would have been planning a month ago to be released today. You might as might want to be paying attention to where public opinion is going on, you know, what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy marks an expansion of the Democrats' midterm agenda, but they are betting that vows to drain the swamp will attract voters to the Democrat side in November. The strategy marks an expansion of the Democrats' midterm agenda, a better deal, remember that, which up until now is focused almost exclusively on kitchen table economic issues in lieu of the controversy surrounding President Trump. No, a better deal went nowhere. You and I have talked about it.
Right.
Nobody is talking about a better deal. A better deal fell flat with liberals.
Yeah.
Even the liberal, many in the liberal press looked at this. I remember we read some of the analysis out there saying, well, there is nothing new
here.
There's nothing about the economy here. This isn't about the economy. This is just about more welfare programs, as we said.
Right.
And so it fell flat because there was nothing new being offered by Democrats on the actual economy. How to boost the private economy.
Yeah, because they can't do that anymore.
Right. Schumer didn't touch that, and that's by the way, that's something that the Republicans need to go after harder. In extending their message to include an anti-corruption component, the Democrats will be painting the Trump administration and Republican supporters on Capitol Hill as an unscrupulous group. Where's the change? This is the change of what they're going to do for the campaign.
Mm.
Is going to peddle Trump as the and Republicans as an unscrupulous group that's used power to pad its own pockets while peddling policies to the highest corporate bidder. I'm glad to see you're changing. This is supposed to be the change. The Democrats are expanding their message. This has always been their message.
Yes. When has it not been their message?
I know. It's just like,
we know what we're going to do. We're going to attack the Republicans. Really? Wow, that's genius. Wow, where'd you come up with that one?
Ugh.
No one's ever thought of that before.
Democrats are promising voters they'd be an alternative, the party that could clean the place up. President Trump has embraced the worst establishment Republican norms and appointed the most conflict of interest ridden cabinet in my lifetime, said Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer Monday at a press conference on the steps of the Capitol.
Yeah.
Do you remember you and I asked when a better deal happened,
mm-hmm.
how long would that go on for? And we said it'll be gone in a week, and it was gone in a week.
Yeah.
It was never talked about again.
No.
And now there's Schumer up there talking about they're going to expand their message. You're not expanding their message. This is the exact same message you've always had about Republicans. It is the only message you've had about Donald Trump.
Right. It's the only message you had about George Bush. It's the only message. We can go back for the ages, and this is the tactic.
The swamp has never been more foul or more fetid than under this president.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
so there you go.
Yeah, here's the problem with that. As you mentioned, timing. You know,
might be bad on that. Yeah.
Well, because it's either one of the two. Like you said, they've probably been planning this for weeks. However, then someone said we can still go forward with this announcement this week because we need to throw some flack the way of the current administration and Republicans. We need to get it ahead of this and make it look like it was the Republicans and the Donald Trump campaign and now the Donald Trump administration that was unjust and that was corrupt. This will be the tactic. There's no other way around it, but it will never be the story. And the reason is because it's nothing new. Attacking Trump. Well, that's brilliant. I know what we'll do.
Hey, all right, everybody, have a seat. All right. Watkins brought donuts. Thank you, Watkins, for that. Listen, we're going to have this conversation and I asked everybody over the weekend to come up with something, our new tactic for the midterm. Who's got an idea?
Trump is unscrupulous.
Yeah,
that's a new idea.
We're going to go after Trump.
Oh, that's great.
Let's demonize Trump as corrupt and unscrupulous.
Yeah.
Wow, that's what a new idea. Let's go with that one. By the way, breaking news that we have to make sure that we get to everybody out there. This from Time Magazine just 7 minutes ago. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's royal wedding guests are reselling their gift bags on eBay. We'll keep you updated onto this breaking news story.
Oh, look, Brian's logging on to eBay.
I should have said breaking news, Brian breaking news.
They're gift bags. All right.
Yes, so there we got that breaking news out for you.
Thank goodness. I'm guessing it's for charity, or it could be some of those poorer celebrities. I'm keeping my money. Yeah. All right. It will be interesting to see how much they go for. How much are people willing to pay?
Lucky guests who attended the wedding are selling their gift bags for lucrative prices, with bids already surpassing $2,700.
Yeah. Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
They don't say whether it's going to charity.
All
one
right.
User placed their gift bag on sale for $2,762.
All right.
So there you go. I have to read this here.
Okay. What's in the bag?
I have no idea, but they go through the whole thing, but it's like boring. Hmm. The monogram bags featured Meghan and Harry's initials, their wedding date and location of the ceremony as well. The bag was the gift. Co-anchors of the Today Show gushed over the goodie bag during their royal wedding coverage Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, they had goodie bags because they were pulling stuff. They got goodie bags, too, so they were pulling the stuff out of it, whatever.
Okay.
It was, but they don't say what was in the bag
as
I'm scanning through it. Because I really never wanted to go past the actual headline of this story.
Mm-hmm.
I never expected to.
Well, you know, like there's $10,000 in cash and I can get the bag for $2,700. That's a good deal.
Yes.
$10,000 in cash. Wouldn't that be cool? And it's American dollars.
Not the British pound?
Yeah, no. And we all know why. Yeah. Thank you for that breaking news update.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm here for, to make sure we get you all the breaking. We're known for breaking news.
Yes. That's critical news. Very important. And we'll be following this story throughout the morning.
Yes. Let's go to Ron in Arlington, Virginia, about Starbucks. Ron, hi. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, like your show. Hey, thanks. I was just saying, I wish I was a manager at that Starbucks. I just would approach the gentleman and said, hey, I know you guys might have a meeting here. You're waiting on somebody. Can I get you a coffee? And just to see if they'd order something. Unfortunately, I've done job interviews at Starbucks, but I've always bought a coffee, and the person that I've been there has bought a coffee. And I think if you're going to sit in a place and use free Wi-Fi, you know, maybe a coffee an hour, you know, just buy a coffee, a little small coffee, and use the Wi-Fi. If you want free Wi-Fi and you don't need a sexy place like Starbucks, go to McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
I've done bandwidth tests. The Wi-Fi is a lot faster than McDonald's, and they will not kick you out if you don't order anything. And first for Pete's sake, there's a dollar menu. You order a hamburger an hour.
I will tell you, they will kick you out if you insist on, you know, sliding down that slide in the playground with your grandkids. I'm just telling you because friend did it.
55 years old and had a beer in you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I see that. No, but I think
thanks,
you know, one, if you look strictly at the business challenges of Starbucks, and this when this note was brought up, and I made me think, and like I said, once every 6 months, a friend of mine wants to go to Starbucks, and the Starbucks we go to, very little seating.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a McDonald's where you walk in and, you know, there's plenty of tables. And a lot of time at lunch, people, even though the lines may be long, you'll see there's so many tables, there'll be a few tables. I've never gone into a McDonald's and not been able to find a table.
Right.
Because even a lot of people pulling up, you know, to the, you know, that their drive-through will be mobbed, and so people actually come into the store to grab their lunch and then head right out when it's probably some of the busiest times, would be either early in the morning or probably right around lunchtime. And so I can tell you this, I can't tell you how many times I've been into a Starbucks and there's not a seat left in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so seating is a huge problem, and you and I being fans of John Taffer, I'm sure the Taffer could sit there and probably tell you, even though it's not a place that serves alcohol, he probably knows, just being in the restaurant business, how much every seat and every table in a Starbucks is worth throughout the year, how much cash revenue it should be making in order to ensure that the franchise owners of that Starbucks, if they're not a company store, you know, that they can make a profit.
Well, and it's the type of store. I mean, there's one in a big mall here that my wife will stop into if we're at that mall, which is rare these days, but there's only a couple of tables in there. It's really meant for people who are walking in the mall. So some of those stores, they understand. In that neighborhood, there may not be a need, a desire for that customer to sit and use Wi-Fi or anything else. They're going to either hit the drive-thru or they're going to go in and get their order and go out. You know, I go to an event every year, and the first thing they do in the morning when we get started is they make a Starbucks run. You know, and I don't drink the coffee, but there's a person that's dedicated from, you know, this organization, and they go in and they make it that run. I think they've done that here in the office a number of times. So, you know, people are transient.
Not
they
for us.
Always sit down. No, not for
not
us.
For us.
Not at 3 a.m.
No Starbucks, no cake.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Front Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Good morning.
This hour is sponsored by Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right. Coming up, the developments in the spy within the Trump campaign.
And we'll have all the latest on the royal wedding
handbags
on eBay with following that breaking news this morning. Seriously, what's in the bag?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Thanks for being here this morning. So, Sports Business Journal reported that the costs for the new stadium for the L.A. Rams and L.A. Chargers has now passed $4 billion.
Wow.
No other stadium in the United States has ever come anywhere close to this. The most expensive stadium previous was MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. That cost $1.7 billion. The Raiders' new stadium in Vegas expected to cost $2 billion. That's still less than half of what the Rams Stadium is going to be. Right now, an estimated $4.25 billion. They think it might eventually creep up to over $5
billion. Wow. Yeah.
In March, the LA Times reported the price had crept up to about $3 billion. Now, Sports Business Journal said the price now estimated to be $4.25 billion. They cited sources that were involved in a bank meeting on May 4th to arrange a $2.25 billion loan. You know what they say part of the extra cost is? Earthquake prevention.
Right.
Build a huge new stadium? Wow. There have also been other costs like access roads and utilities that it added up the price. The $4.25 billion doesn't even include the entire complex.
They're going to do more along. They're going to add more.
Retail
along the way.
Price, commercial development, the new NFL Network headquarters.
Right.
When all that is included, the total project could be over $5 billion. Mm. They're borrowing $2.25 billion for it, $400 million from the NFL's Stadium Financing Fund, which, again, you have to pay back, and then $1.6 billion from the owner. The Chargers will also pay off a portion of the debt costs. How will the Rams pay down the debt? They'll use the bank credit as construction advances and use personal seat license fees to pay down the debt. But the interest alone could be more than $50 million a year. The interest alone on that. The stadium's opening has already been delayed a year due to weather issues. Once the stadium opens in 2020, they say it'll be one of the best stadiums. It better be.
Yeah, they also announced the menu there. Hot dogs will be $499.
They want everybody to know you can't just come and hang out during the game.
Right.
Okay. The stadium people want, you know, they're not going to have a Starbucks policy.
Mm-hmm.
They need to pay off the if you add the $400 million, at least $2.6, $2.7 billion in loans means that there's no loitering around the concession stands.
Right.
Either you're buying or you're out.
Right.
In the real world now, and you and I, the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, and as we said, that wasn't the only reason why the NFL was losing people. It might have been the number one reason, might have been the number two reason. It definitely was a reason that people, you know, were disenchanted with the NFL. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, as we have said, young kids aren't as into football. There's other things to do.
Well, I mean, we have a ton more distractions in terms of any given source of entertainment. So that's going on with pretty much all forms of entertainment right now.
And the thing I've talked about for years and asked this question, when will it come to the point? Now, we have seen in television ratings almost a 20% drop in the last 2 years in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
That eventually is going to hit at attendance. Many have warned the NFL. Have you seen what happened in NASCAR?
Right.
Did you ever think? You know, funny thing is, I talked about when I started not working with you, but when I started in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
when I moved here from Oregon to Dallas back in 2000. I mean, NASCAR was at its peak.
Right.
I mean, it was just monstrous, just unbelievably huge. And not that it's not still a huge sport, but it's not as huge as it was, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a sponsorship is almost a premium right now, isn't it?
Right. I mean, and that goes back to the ratings. I mean, attendance is a big deal, and ratings is a big deal for all professional sports.
Yep.
And if you looked at what was going on with NASCAR, those ratings, of course, that's what would drive, no pun intended, the sponsorship. You know, it was the television viewership. You wanted those huge logos on the hood for a reason. And so you could get that sponsorship. That's very much still alive, but it has changed. And it's changed because the viewership has changed. I think the recession changed things for a lot of companies in terms of measuring that kind of advertising and whether or not it was going to be effective for them. You know, you look at the Papa John's deal with the NFL and pulling out there. A lot of that has to do with the fact that viewership habits are changing in professional sports. And if there's going to be this, you know, this big grand display every week, if it's going to be that kind of show, then it has to be about the game. And that's where the whole Colin Kaepernick thing came in. You want to do that outside the stadium.
Right.
Nobody cared before. For athletes to be politically vocal or opinionated in the past outside the game, maybe in an SI
article or whatever in an interview. Nobody cared about that. Just don't make it part of the presentation of the game.
I remember when Doug Flutie endorsed Hillary Clinton for Senate in New York.
Mm. Yeah.
So, but it wasn't on the field.
Right.
And so, you know, a few people grumbled, but nobody really cared because it was off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm getting to right now, where, you know, getting now that I'm in my very, very younger middle age, mm-hmm. now that my age is the new 30, being in my 30s
mm-hmm.
and a little bit more expendable income, I still come from a point of what is the value?
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about this, that we could, even though the one listener accused us of being billionaires, we are not billionaires. But even if I was a billionaire, and probably a lot of billionaires tell you the same thing. There's still a certain worth that they have on anything. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It's what you still will look at something and say, well, is that what it's worth? I'm not going to buy something that isn't worth that much just because I happen to have, you know, the money. When I started going to sporting events, for example, my first experience at an NFL game, of course, I grew up in Buffalo. Buffalo Bills against the Baltimore Colts. You ever see the movie The Natural?
Mm-hmm.
You know that old decrepit stadium? That's where the Bills used to play, War Memorial Stadium. That was Natural was filmed in Buffalo. That's where I went to the first football game. To me, that was the Taj Mahal as a kid. It didn't matter. I mean, this was a... this was a 1940s built stadium that had minimal amenities. Let's put it that way. Very minimal amenities. The hot dogs probably are still the same as a lot of different stadiums around, you know, cold and in that little foil thing.
Mm-hmm.
That I do remember, but it didn't matter. We're just going to a professional game. It was huge, but that stadium, I mean, it was old, but it didn't matter. But I remember going, and our first tickets, I think, that because we bought them, and we would have been either in junior high or just in high school, $3 or $4 for an NFL game where we as kids could afford it. And then when the NBA came to town, we used to get all the time, we used to get the discount seats. It was $3 or $4 that we paid. And we were able to get seats in the upper deck, but it's center court for most of the games. And the most expensive seat where we went down one time, we actually got tickets one time, $12 each, and sat in when the Boston Celtics came in town. I'll never forget about 10 years ago. I know this is going to amaze you, but I was on a date. And we went to a Mavericks game.
With another person?
With a woman. Did
she know you were on a date, or did you just buy a seat that happened to be next to where a woman was sitting?
No, she agreed to go with me, and I bought both tickets.
Okay.
Okay. But we got really good seats.
Okay.
But she was sitting there, and she was asking, because Don Nelson at that time was coach of the Dallas Mavericks.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, where did Don Nelson come from? And I said, well, you know, I saw him as a, you know, player playing in the NBA. About 10 seconds goes by. She turns very slowly. She looks at me and she said, how the hell old are you?
Yeah.
And I said, oh, no, I'm very young. Don Nelson aged quickly.
Uh-huh.
Of course. Which means I didn't look my age to her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was, you know. So I look at that and when I see that a ticket to a game now is... $200-$300 when you see the personal seat license that they're going to have in Los Angeles, which probably will mirror what they had in Dallas, maybe even more.
Mm-hmm.
Tens of thousands of dollars. Weren't some of those seat licenses $60,000, $70,000, $80,000?
Yeah, I don't know what the price was.
Yeah, and if you get that, but it means though that if you get the seat license, you're guaranteed that season ticket for 30 years. But I was a season ticket holder for the Dallas Cowboys without a seat license. People are saying this
mm-hmm.
for 30 years and never had to get a seat license.
Yeah, it implies there's going to be a demand. You lose first right of refusal if you don't get the seat license.
So you look at that and you just you say, how much are people, when we now have the new OLED TVs, that I don't have one, but I've seen one in the store. Whoa. Mm-hmm. And everybody's getting 55 and 65-inch TVs. My buddy Jeff has a 65-inch TV. I went over there to watch an NFL game. I went, I think the close-up of that guy's head with the helmet is actually bigger than it would be in real life. It's like you were there. And so I look at that and I said, how long are people going to put out that kind of money to see a sport? When will people finally say, I'm not going to pay $200 to see an NBA game for every single game, and then, you know, to have a decent seat, and then playoffs, they're up to $300 and $400. No, the average person can't afford that. Mm-hmm. So when will they finally get to the point where even those that have money say, not worth it? The entertainment just isn't worth it anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't have the answer. I've never had the answer to this when I see a story like this.
I don't know where that threshold is, but I think it's more really about, you know, that whole attention span thing. How much time do we have to go spend even on a Sunday? You know, 3 hours, 4 hours, you know, or 5 hours getting to the game and back. You know, for people, for viewers on TV, it's the same question. How much time do you have to spend? Because back in the day, the diehard fan, and there are still some, would wake up and you start watching, you know, the pregame, and you're watching the NFL all the way through Sunday night. You go to work on Monday, you come home, you watch it again. You know, so now there's a lot less time being spent in by any given fan on the average.
Yeah, no, I don't want to watch the pregame. I just want to watch the game.
Right.
I've watched enough pregames. I don't care. Let's guess what the score is going to be. I don't care what you think. Mm-hmm. That's why the game's being played. You have no idea, and no news of anybody else, so stop it.
Yeah, but, those diehard fans would be there from 11 a.m.
I used to be.
Yeah, until the last game was done Sunday night.
Right, and then I changed. Just show me the game.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm done.
Well, and it's also, I'm really only interested in one game.
Yeah.
Okay, if I don't get home, you know, to see the first quarter, that's fine. I'll catch the second half and I'll catch up on it. Because, again, that's just the changing mentality of people and how we want to be entertained.
Well, the NFL, they have a serious problem with the erosion of their TV audience over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge. It was at 17, 18%.
Yeah. Oh, that's
over
that's
a
2 year
period.
Yeah.
That's massive. It's exactly what NASCAR went through.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you see these stadiums that they're building and you're saying, wow.
That TV money starts to go away and it has. I mean,
not yet.
You know, well, it's eroding based on those ratings.
Right. Well, they do get a rebate on it. Yes.
It's going away. Yes. So when that goes away, you're going to have to do something desperate. And that goes back to the whole negotiations on contracts coming up. I don't know what the fix is, because I don't know if people are going to come back regardless of protests or not.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Eric Harley, I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you would like to get in. We've had some great calls and comments. We'll have some great audio cuts coming up here in a little bit, plus one of the finest stories ever.
Mm.
I mean, seriously, one of the finest stories ever about a couple in New York State who's trying to get rid of their son. Their 30-year-old son lives in the House.
Mm.
He won't leave. Doesn't pay rent, doesn't help out, doesn't have a job. He's 30 years old. They can't get rid of him. And so apparently they've gone to court.
Yeah.
And the court's reviewing the case. So we'll have the specific details coming up, including the letters that they actually presented in court, apparently, that they wrote to their son. This is classic.
Does a 30-year-old adult child have tenants' rights?
No. We'll have to read the story. I keep forgetting I live in Texas.
Each state has their own tenants' rights. I mean, it could apply here. I have no idea what their tenants' rights in that state are.
I know they address it.
Yeah.
So that's coming up here. You won't want to miss this.
For VDO Roadlog, here is your forecast.
A stationary front with us throughout the day yesterday is moving slightly to the north and east. We'll see an area of low pressure along that frontal boundary in the northeast today. Pennsylvania Turnpike, look to use your windshield wipers there. As you move northward out of New York City up into upstate New York, good chance of rain throughout that region. Southward in the deep south, a chance for rain continues today. South Florida with some heavy showers in the forecast, drying out somewhat for the northern and central plains as well as the Midwest. A few select cities forecast and high temperature. Boston, partly cloudy, chance of showers until tomorrow, 69 the high. Atlanta, thunderstorms, 81. Dallas, 90 with a 30% chance of thunderstorms. Denver, mostly sunny, 82. Seattle, sunny and 76. L.A., cloudy and 69. The threat of flooding continues in the Mid-Atlantic due to recent rainfall. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Anytime, 24 hours a day. Say, Alexa, play Red Eye Radio, and we thank you.
I'm Gary, he's Eric, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, here we go. A couple in New York State, Onondaga County. Trying to kick their son out of their house. Mm. Now a court is reviewing the case. Before you judge these parents... Say, wait a minute, why don't they want the kid in the house? Because he's 30 years old. Mark and Christina Rotundo say their 30-year-old son, Michael, doesn't pay rent and doesn't help out. In several letters, they explicitly told him to get out. Here's one letter, dated February 2nd, 2018. That's why I said this is just a great story. Serious part of it, though, but still a great story. Dear Michael, after a discussion with your mother, we have decided that you must leave this house immediately. You have 14 days to vacate. You will not be allowed to return. We will take whatever actions are necessary to enforce this decision. Signed, Mark and Christina Rotundo. A series of eviction notices span the month of February. Letters addressed to Michael express that he was their guest, and there is no lease agreement that gives you the right to stay here without our consent. Here is that letter. February 13th, 2018. Michael, you are hereby evicted from the address. Immediately, you have heretofore been our guest, and there is no lease or agreement that gives you any right to stay here without our consent. On the advice of our lawyer. We have decided to grant you up to 30 days from the date shown above to remove your possessions and vacate the premises. A legal enforcement procedure will be instituted immediately if you do not leave by March 15th of 2018. Mm-hmm. Any action that you take can be construed as threatening or harassing or to us or prevents us or obstructs our ability to use a house or property at the address as we see fit will result in your immediate removal from the premises. Signed, Christina Rotundo, owner, Mark Rotundo, spouse. In another letter, 5 days later, the parents offer him cash and advice on how to navigate being out of their home.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, here is $1,100 from us so you can find a place today to stay. Some advice. Organize the things you need for work and to manage an apartment. Note, you will need stuff. You will need stuff at a particular store. You must arrange the date and time through your father so he can set it up with the tenant. I don't know what that means.
I don't know.
Okay. Sell the other things you have that have any significant value. Stereo, some tools. This is especially true for any weapons you might have. You need money and will have no place for that stuff. Three, there are jobs available even for those with a poor work history like you. Get one. You have to work. Number four, if you want help finding a place, your mother has offered to help you. Signed, Christina and Mark Rotundo. The parents' warnings of eviction went unheeded, so they finally filed motions to have the court remove him from their home. The court filing shows that Michael wants a judge to dismiss his parents' request. The court hearing is set for this week.
Hmm.
I believe all you have to do is take his keys, change the locks.
That's what I would have done.
Right?
Yeah. Unless he never leaves the house.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The first thing I would do is take the door off of his room, off of his bedroom. There will be no, you will have no privacy because you have no privacy rights or rights to the access of this home.
Yeah.
I'd also put a lock on the fridge.
So is this just the first hearing? Because you would assume that a judge would say, you know, this would take about 5 minutes, right? You're out.
I'm guessing. I don't know about tenants or occupants' rights in that state, though. I have no idea. They vary from state to state.
Well, it's interesting that the lawyer said, just to be sure, give him 30 days.
Right.
It's not paying rent. There mm-hmm. is no lease.
No, even if they had some of the strictest laws, or I guess the laws that favored tenants even more, and tenants do have rights in every state. But even if they had some of the strictest in the nation, you've gone through they've done their work here. They've done their due diligence, and 30 days is reasonable. And they also offered money. So, seriously, is he awake? Has anyone checked to see if he's sleeping through all this? Yeah. No, you just, I would just take access away.
Well, they're probably about 12 years late from enforcing tough love.
Yeah.
And I say when you're...
I mean, assuming he's been there the whole 12 years, he's never lived away from home.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Is it 18, you either, go to school, get a job, one or the other.
You got to be doing something to help.
Or in my house, do both. Go to school and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Which my parents never had to tell me because you just did that. That's what you did. Everybody wanted to do that.
Yeah, never had to be said.
That's the one thing. And I don't know the relationship between this family. I don't know if they've enabled him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's a lot we don't know. For example, when I just said, maybe they should have done it 12 years ago, and you brought up a great point. Maybe he was gone. So we don't know the complete history of this family, but the one thing that really you and I talked about, remember when Katrina hit New Orleans, and we talked about all those young people, not the older people, but the young people, outside the dome down there. And you and I said, wow. Because it was 2 days before it hit, it was a Hurricane 5 heading right there. And you and I said, wow, liberalism has won. And liberalism has won because these were able-bodied people. And as I said, if I knew a Hurricane 5 was heading down and I lived in New Orleans, I'd walk out. Mm-hmm. In 2 days, I could find it. If I started walking, I'd get a wagon, I'd get water, whatever snacks I could pick up. And if I didn't have a car, I'd start walking. You walk because in a day, as a young, able-bodied young person, as so many of them were, you could get out. And I just, you and I both said, wow, liberalism has won. Because the pathology of dependency that the government will save me was more powerful than the instinct of self-preservation to get out. And when that happens, you know at that point, it shows you how strong the pathology of dependency can be. In this case, what always gets me is, yeah, my parents, you know, my parents were strict. I was a middle child, so I actually got away with a little bit more. But from the time I was 14 or whenever I could get that paper out, I wanted that paper out because I wanted extra money. I wanted that independence. There was something in me and in so many of us that wanted to break away from your parents. You wanted to be independent. That was the natural, I think, flow of things. The instinct, I want out. I wish to be on my own. One of the things is I remember being, you know, even 14, 15, 16, the mentality, my parents give me an allowance, they're going to tell me what to do and what I have to do. Mm-hmm. I'm more free if I'm taking care of myself. That's a concept. Mm-hmm. Self-sufficiency also means you acquire a certain amount of freedom. All conservatives understand that. But here, 30 years old, and you say to yourself, if this person doesn't want to get out and do anything at that age, they're never going to be a success. How do you turn the pathology of this guy, the pathology that he has acquired of dependence around? I don't know if it's possible once you get to a certain age.
Well, generally speaking, I think that we failed a couple of generations by telling them that they didn't have to earn things, whether it was their grades or anything else along the way. Mm-hmm. You get a grade for showing up. All right, I agree. The biggest part of it every day, especially in the workforce, is showing up. But you also have to perform. You can't just show up and make manager. You have to show up, and then you have to work harder and harder every day in order to move up in life. That's the whole idea, is that at some point you've got that independence, and hopefully at a younger age than your parents did. Every parent wants that for their children. I want to know that they're making more money and have greater opportunity than I had when I was their age. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. You want their life to be better. You want each generation to be better. But that starts with the willingness of the person. Now, it varies from person to person. Some people are just flat out lazy. And I believe it's almost like Surfer Guy. You know, there's a very distinct possibility this 30-year-old could just go move in with a friend and sleep on their couch forever because they just aren't motivated at all to do anything. Those people exist.
Well, he hasn't had to.
Right.
And this is where we've talked about the pathology of dependency, where people really would. And we see this right now in this country, where people would rather not work but get the minimal sustenance, where you may not live a great life, but you get the minimal sustenance needed in order to survive. And being able to do nothing is preferable than doing something, mm-hmm, and maybe going to places that your wildest dreams never imagined. No, I'd rather just get the minimal sustenance and just survive each and every day.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I mean, I can't imagine a more depressing place. I know people like that. They're not happy people.
No.
They're not happy people.
Well, because you don't get the self-satisfaction of knowing you've accomplished something every day. You know, I mean, you're setting, when you do that, when you're driven, you're setting that standard. And I don't mean like the, you know, the billionaire kind of driven. I mean, just driven enough to get up and go be productive every day. You're setting that standard for yourself. You know, it's the thing that you have to do. You know, there's plenty of times I'm sure everyone says to themselves, well, man, I would rather just stay home for a month and do nothing. Yeah, but we know we're not that. Most people are just aren't that way because of that instinct for survival. But when you condition someone their entire life that they don't have to do anything, they don't have to show up, they don't have to earn anything, then they'll likely live the rest of their life that way to some degree.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, the last gasp of Trump and Russia collusion theories.
Okay.
I mean, this is really the last gasp. Wait till you hear this audio coming up here in just a little bit. Didn't you see the Boston Globe reported yesterday that President Trump's staff, when they tweet for him, they tried to, you know, capitalize words that shouldn't be capitalized. They don't intentionally misspell words, but they fragment sentences and use capitals where they shouldn't be in order to mirror the president's style so people believe it's the president who wrote it.
Do you think they struggle with that? Okay, does this look right? Well, no, it looks wrong. Okay, then tweet it. It looks very wrong. All right, tweet it. Did you put sad and then exclamation point at the end? Yeah.
Well, right. We knew a while back that, you know, early on he was writing the majority of his tweets, but we knew that it became it you know, they believe it was effective, and so that, you know, they decided to have the staff also craft it, and they actually come up with ideas and then approach him, and he'll change a couple of words here or there on it, but sometimes they don't. A lot of times they do consult them. Sometimes they don't. The ones that are authorized to tweet, you know, for him, whoever that is. I don't know specifically who that person would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that.
But that would be just an interesting job. Because for, I guess, any other president, you're just going to write the basic political non-dramatic approach to any given statement, right? On Twitter, on social media.
Yes.
And really, it was only Obama. Obama was the first to be active on Twitter. So this is completely new territory with Trump, I'm sure.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.